Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The presidential candidates are campaigning in the snow up in New Hampshire today, a final day of diner meet-and-greets and rallies before the first-in-the-nation primary tomorrow. Donald Trump is holding four events in the Granite State. Hillary Clinton will make her final pitch this evening with her husband and daughter Bill and Chelsea. And just an hour ago, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders rallied supporters in Manchester, telling them Americans work longer hours than any other industrialized nation.
Now, at the end of all of that, with people working incredibly long hours, guess what? 58% of all new income is going to the top 1%. You guys ready for a radical idea? Yeah. All right. Together, we are going to create an economy that works for working families, not just the top 1%.
Well, in the latest New Hampshire tracking polls from UMass WHDH, Sanders leads Clinton by 16 points, and Trump tops the GOP field by 17 points, with Rubio, Cruz, Kasich, and Bush each within 4 points of each other. So let's turn now to WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. He's been in New Hampshire talking with voters this weekend and today, and he's just fresh back from that Bernie Sanders event, and he's in our studio in Manchester, New Hampshire. Hi there, Anthony.
Hey, Meghna. Good to hear you.
It's great to hear you, too. So what are you seeing today from the candidates in terms of last-minute campaigning?
Well, it's a frenzy of last-minute campaigning. I got up this morning. I went to a John Kasich event, as you mentioned. I went to that Bernie Sanders event. Pretty much all the candidates are having multiple events, so tons of political activity. You mentioned Trump, Hillary Clinton, and so there's sort of a feel of, I don't know, it almost sort of feels a little bit like a party, but it's more than theater, because we know that lots of voters out there have only recently begun to focus on this race, and we know that lots of them are still making up their mind. We keep saying this, and I was really struck yesterday, Meghna. I went to three or four different events. How many voters I talked to told me that they were still making up their mind. So there's something really at stake, big at stake today. This is more than just speeches. It really is trying to say to folks, hey, vote for me.
Right. And I wonder if we're seeing, more evidence of what you just said in the polling numbers that I was quoting, the UMass WHDH poll. I mean, for example, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, and Jeb Bush, all just within 4 points of each other.
Yeah, it really is possible. And, Meghna, we've got someone here in the studio who's just terrific on this issue. We've had him on the show a number of times. Andy Smith is director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, co-author as well of the first primary in New Hampshire's outsized role in presidential nomination. So, Andy, thanks for being with us. Good to have you.
Thank you.
So what do you think about Meghna's question? What are your latest polls showing in terms of the overall contours of this race?
Well, it's completely, I would say, not completely up in the air, but the point about people not having made up their minds is absolutely the case. We're currently seeing on the Republican side that only about 45% of Republicans say they've definitely decided who they're going to support. It's only about 60, 65% of Democrats who say they've definitely decided who they're going to support. And that's not atypical. Back in 2012, 46% of Republicans said they made up their minds in the last 3 days, and 21% said they made up their mind on the last day.
21% on the last day.
On the last day. And that's been pretty typical. It's been 10 to 20% saying they've made up their mind on the last day, going back to 2000 at least.
Andy, what explains that? Is that something peculiar to the way new folks in New Hampshire make up their mind, or is this just the way folks generally think about politics?
Well, first of all, I'd say it's a primary. Yeah. So there's not that much difference between the candidates on policy positions within a party. Secondly, the biggest reason, I think, is that New Hampshire has high turnout. In 2008, we had 54% of the voting eligible population vote. This year, we're expecting, well, maybe now with the weather, not quite as much, but about that kind of number. That means it's not just activists. It's regular people who don't pay much attention to politics, don't know much about these candidates, and certainly don't know much about their positions on issues. And I think what we should do, instead of asking why don't they make up their mind, is say, why should they make up their minds early? You have an opportunity all the way through the end to to see what they're going to do, how they behave, how they react in stressful situations. For example, the debate Saturday night, in which Marco Rubio looked very, very shocked and surprised on stage.
Andy, can I just jump in here? Because we actually have a piece of tape that's telling exactly the portion of the debate that you're talking about. So let's play it here. I mean, it's the one that's kind of made its way around the world. Now, when he got in a tangle with New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and Chris Christie basically accused him of not being able to go beyond his 25-second stump speech. So let's listen to the latter half of that exchange.
See. Those are the facts. Here's the bottom line. This notion that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing is just not
true.
There
it is.
He knows exactly
what he's
doing.
There it is, the memorized 25-second speech.
Well, that's the reason why this campaign is so important.
So, Andy, I mean, just to sort of dovetail off what you were just saying earlier, now that we are in the last few days, and technically today the last day before the primary, I mean, how much of an effect does something like that have on a candidate in New Hampshire?
Well, it could have a significant effect. We really don't know. And unfortunately, I'll say as a pollster, it's really impossible to tell if that's going to have an impact based on the polls that we have. Typically, for any sort of signature event in any campaign to register in polls, it takes at least 2 days after the event for the public to really start paying attention to it, or really have that understand and digest it. And then it takes a couple of days later before that's really reflected in polls. So we're going to see what happens in the impact of that in the real polls, the election day polls, rather than the pre-election polls.
It's interesting, you know, Meghna, I would answer that question as a reporter. I was around the state a lot yesterday, and I think there's no doubt it's hurting Rubio. I mean, just the fact that you and Andy and I are talking about this rather than his post-Iowa surge, which was the Rubio story up until the debate. And yesterday I went to a Rubio event, a Jeb Bush event, and a Chris Christie event. Maybe not surprising at the Chris Christie event, there was a lot of talk about this. But I was really shocked to find people at the Rubio event saying, yeah, I was supporting him, but I'm not so sure now after what I saw. I mean, I heard that. In fact, we've got some tape of Kevin Goodhue and Diane Lytle of Nashua. They were at the Christie event, but they've gone from being undecided to supporting Christie. Here's what they said.
I think he showed Rubio for his true colors, actually. And like Kevin, we both like the fact that he has the experience as a governor. We need somebody tough in there.
Well, I feel the same way. The debate last night, I thought he was terrific, bringing out what Rubio really, the lack of experience that Rubio has. And, you know, I want someone in there that's going to be a real hard ass.
So Meghna, this really gave Chris Christie a sort of gift on the Sunday before the primary. That said, and in defense of Marco Rubio, he was attracting big crowds yesterday. I think some of the biggest, actually, I'd seen of the campaign so far. So like Andy says, I think it hurt him. The question is, how much did it hurt him? And obviously, there's no real way to answer that.
Yeah, that's why we see in polling that the pre-election polls, even the final pre-election polls, are so often not reflective of what actually happens. Because we're asking people, you know, a day or 2 days before the election, what would they do if the election were held today? And they'll give us an answer. But like the people that you just played, there's a significant number of people for whom they'll change their mind between when we ask them who they're going to vote for and Election Day.
Yeah. Andy, I'm curious. I mean, I was just looking at the subtitle of your book again, New Hampshire's Outsized Role in Presidential Nominations. In the context of the 2016 race thus far, I mean, how outsized of a role could New Hampshire play after we find out, you know, how people choose tomorrow?
Well, New Hampshire is a very small state. We only have a population of about 1.4 million. Certainly, we don't have enough delegates to influence either party's nomination contest. But it has an outsized role because somebody is going to do well or better than expected in New Hampshire and certainly be able to live and fight another day. And then there are other people who are not. And those people, after losing New Hampshire with essentially zero delegates, to be fair, are going to fold up their tents and go home. Mm. And is it fair that a very small state does that? No, probably. But we can't really come up with a better method or a method that might be better that has fewer potential problems.
We had a commentary on this morning on WBUR. I mean, this is, as you know, Andy, this is an issue that comes up every 4 years. You know, is it fair, a very small state, a largely rural state, a mostly white state, is it really fair that it does have this this role? And it's easy to argue that it should not have this role. On the other hand, I'm not sure what the solution is. I mean, there's talk of a larger regional primary, which sounds fair, but if it has to start somewhere, it seems like what's great about it starting in a state like New Hampshire is that it's small and you can get access to these people and really sort of look them in the eye and see them. Now, some people might argue, and I heard this the other day, saying that these are skills that have nothing to do with being president. Mm-hmm. But I sort of disagree because I think it gives folks like me and like the average voter out there a chance to really size these people up. Because after New Hampshire, the whole process atomizes across the country and you don't have that process. So I'm not arguing so much for New Hampshire, but I'm just arguing for if not New Hampshire, then I don't know, would Rhode Island be fairer or would Delaware be fairer? Or
it almost would have to be a small state, a state that is not too expensive to campaign in.
Yeah.
Ohio, where I'm from, would not be a good state. Too many media markets. The only people that could win in a state like that would be the people with the most money. Yeah. A regional primary would pretty much preclude any candidate who had modest money and modest name recognition. So New Hampshire does give candidates both the opportunity to sell themselves at a smaller level with limited resources, but it really forces people to listen to what voters think.
Yeah.
And I think that's the real value that it has, is that it educates the candidates as much as it educates the voters.
It forces the candidates to listen to what New Hampshire voters think.
Well, I'll give you an example that occurred this time around. So early on, people started getting questions about what they would do about overdoses and opioid problems. That was not on anybody's radar screen at the national level. But when people started hearing about that in New Hampshire, this little small suburban state, wealthy state, and it's got an opioid crisis where more people are dying from drug overdoses than car accidents. That makes these candidates sit back and say, uh-oh, something's going on. And it's not just New Hampshire that has this problem, right. But it comes up here first, and then they have to respond to it. So I think that's a good example of the candidates really learning something that they had not anticipated and that their national polling or that their focus groups would not likely pick up as a major issue.
Anthony, can I just have you and Andy stand by for just a second here? Because there's another voice I want to bring in to the conversation. It's David Shribman. He's executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and former Washington bureau chief of the Boston Globe, and he's covered the New Hampshire primaries for decades. He joined us a couple weeks back talking about his favorite moments from primaries past. David Shribman, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's great to have you. So, now that we're right at the eve of the primary tomorrow, what are you thinking? Where's your mind vis-a-vis what's going on in New Hampshire?
Well, I think for all the talk of the potential death of the New Hampshire primary and even some of the talk of some of my colleagues a few seconds ago, this has been one of the great New Hampshire primaries of all time, particularly since that Saturday night kind of heavyweight fight there I think the only episode that I can remember that was quite as stark as that would have been the Quayle Benson debate in 1988 when Lloyd Benson said to Quayle, Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine, you're no Jack Kennedy. I think we'll be remembering the Chris Christie exchange for the rest of our political lives. It was an amazing moment and the highlight of a really amazing, really terrific New Hampshire primary.
You know, David, I was at a Bush event yesterday, and there was a great comment about that. Someone said, it was Lindsey Graham, the South Carolina senator and former presidential candidate. He said, I think what we learned in that debate were a couple of things. One of the most important things is don't make Chris Christie mad.
It was right.
Good advice.
And it sort of got me thinking, that's New Jersey political debating. I'm just wondering what, New Jersey style fighting would be like. Sort of a scary idea.
Anyway. Yeah, but, in this primary, you had John Kasich basically camping out in New Hampshire while everybody else was in Iowa. You had some great Hillary moments. You had some really interesting Donald Trump moments. You had Jeb Bush beginning to catch his stride a little bit, maybe too late, but beginning to catch that stride. You just had so many great moments in this primary. I can't remember one as exciting as this. Maybe 1988, but I can't remember anyone but for that.
Well, Anthony, can I just throw in a question to you? Because you're our man on the ground there in the Granite State. Can we talk about the Democrats for a second? Because obviously there are...
Not nearly as interesting.
but you know, arguably there's just as much at stake for the candidates, right? I mean, because we've had Secretary of State Madeleine Albright and Gloria Steinem out on the stump supporting Hillary. Apparently on Saturday night, Madeleine Albright introduced Hillary Clinton at a rally in New Hampshire saying this.
We can tell our story about how we climb the ladder, and a lot of you younger women don't think you have to... It's been done. It's not done, and you have to help. Hillary Clinton will always be there for you. And just remember, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other.
So, Anthony, I mean, there's been a lot of backlash to that, hasn't there?
Yeah, there really has. I'm not sure it hurt Hillary Clinton. I mean, I certainly don't think it helped her make the case that women voting for Bernie Sanders should come over to her side. But as you say, it has caused a lot of angry pushback from younger female voters who are supporting Sanders. But more than what Albright said, Gloria Steinem said these women are supporting Bernie Sanders because that's where the boys are, which was really astounding. And in fact, she had to apologize for that. So there's been a lot of buzz about this issue. And but it does point actually to a significant challenge that Clinton has, and that is younger voters, younger women voters. But and Andy Smith can speak to this. They're going to Sanders, according to the polls, in a big way. So Clinton has a problem here.
Well, she certainly does among voters who are under 35 years old. So not particularly young, but youngish voters. Sanders is getting 85% support among that group. Mm. Staggering. Among people who have never voted in a primary, or certainly haven't voted in the last two primaries, Sanders is getting 84%. So he has definitely been able to energize a new generation of voters, and young men and young women, to support him. I think that there are some interesting things that are going on. I think it's definitely a generational change, despite the fact that Bernie Sanders is the oldest candidate in the race. He's representing the new Democratic Party, which is far more liberal, far more progressive than the Democratic Party of even 8 years ago. So what we're seeing in our polls here in New Hampshire, that 8 years ago, 40% of the Democratic primary electorate identified as politically liberal. It's 51% this year. Huh. That's a significant change. Yeah. And those liberal voters are definitely going for Sanders.
Yeah. And David Tribman, I mean, this raises such an interesting point. And I agree with you that the Republican sort of tussle is much easier to dial into and in some ways sort of more satisfying and fun to watch. But at stake on the Democratic side seems to be a real... fight for the sort of future and heart and soul of what the Democratic Party is. I mean, it really seems to be a kind of pivotal moment here. What do you think?
You know, that thought first occurred to me in Exeter in July, and I actually my next job was going to be I'd like to take over the Exeter Town Hall, and because every candidate spoke there, but. And Bernie, it was like 95 degrees, one of the hottest days of the year, and there were every inch of that place was full, and it occurred to me right there that Bernie was where the Democratic Party is right now. Hillary is not, I don't think. And Bernie is right at the center of what the Democratic Party wants right now, where its fondest hopes, its most fervent desires are really being expressed, I think, by Bernie, which is why Mrs. Clinton is having a hard time right now, or maybe less a hard time than she might have had had she not had a pretty good week, but nonetheless a hard time, because I think that's where the Democrats are.
Hmm. Really interesting.
Particularly on wealth and Wall Street.
Hmm. Yeah.
I mean, but so in a way, David and Andy, I'll throw this to actually Anthony, I'll throw this to all of you. I mean, there's always this conversation about in primaries, you get the fervent base, but how well does that sort of translate to the party as a whole or the nation as a whole as we move out of the primaries? Now, we're early, obviously, in the political season yet, but that question's been asked of the GOP a lot. I mean, it's still worth asking of the Democrats. I mean, will Hillary Clinton's strengths become more evident as we get deeper into the season?
Well, I have a thought about that. And I mean, my thinking was, I think when Bernie Sanders sort of began to ignite in New Hampshire, I was sort of thinking, you know, he's a neighbor. And like you suggested, Magna, this is a primary, and that always brings the sort of fervent edges of the parties out. But then he goes out to Iowa and somehow catches fire out there and makes that message work 1,000 miles from home. Now, right. I know you're still talking about the edges of the party, but it's still, to me, I get a sense that he's tapped into a deep vein of unrest and economic insecurity and economic dislocation. And I think the issues that he's talking about regular working people not being able to afford education, not being able to do the things that their parents used to be able to do. Today, for instance, in the speech, and he talks about this a lot at his events, and that is, he kind of gets sarcastic. He said, you know, I want to tell you about an amazing time in America when it was possible for a middle-class working family to have one person working. And, you know, that wasn't that long ago, but it's almost inconceivable now for most working families. So I think he's tapping into something that really could catch fire across the country.
And I think it's not just the edge of the party either.
Right.
Again, New Hampshire's got a high turnout. This is mainstream Democratic Party in many parts of the country right now. We're seeing there was a poll that was done among Iowa caucus goers where a plurality identified themselves as socialists rather than capitalists. And I think part of the problem is most of us are still looking at the political world through the eyes of when we grew up. I was growing up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s during the Cold War when socialism was a dangerous, bad thing. That meant the Soviets and the Gulag. Now it means France and Denmark.
Yeah.
Well, to quote David Truman, back to yourself, I agree with you. This is one heck of a exciting New Hampshire primary. So looking forward to see what happens tomorrow.
I can't wait for the next one.
Lots of answers tomorrow.
Absolutely. Well, David Truman is executive editor of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and former Washington bureau chief of the Boston Globe. David, thanks so much for joining us again.
No, thank you. Thanks so much.
And Andy Smith, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center and co-author of The First Primary New Hampshire's Outsized Role in Presidential Nominations. Great to talk with you, Andy.
Thank you very much.
And Anthony Brooks. Oh, it's always wonderful to talk to you, our WBR senior political reporter. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. You got a busy day.
Looking forward to that, Magna. It'll be fun.
It'll be great. New Hampshire primary is tomorrow, but there's a little bit more Radio Boston when we come back. So stick with us. I'm Magna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.